Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. British director Mike Leigh's films are anything but Hollywood style. Forget the divas, the starlets, the million-dollar-a-day actors. Mike Leigh works differently. His films are gritty and urban, sometimes funny, sometimes tragic, always looking to portray everyday people at work and at home in the drama of something like real life. From a 1950s housewife who doubles as an abortionist in Vera Drake, to a young black woman who seeks out her white birth mother in Secrets and Lies, Mike Leigh's films make you think. This time out, he's making us think about smiling, laughing, compassion as a principled stand. This hour, On Point, director Mike Leigh on his far from Hollywood life in film and his latest release, Happy Go Lucky. You can join the conversation. What Mike Leigh movies have spoken to you? Naked, Life is Sweet, Vera Drake. How about his upbeat new film, Happy Go Lucky? Mike Leigh joins me now from London. He's been making movies for 35 years, nominated for 5 Oscars and winner of the Best Director Award at Cannes for his 1993 film, Naked. Critics praise his work for finding the tragic beauty of the mundane and the compelling texture of everyday life. The Washington Post's Anne Hornaday calls the heroine of his new film, Happy Go Lucky, this year's most unforgettable and even revolutionary screen protagonist. At a time when, in Hollywood at least, violence, bleakness, and pessimism are continually confused with moral seriousness. Mike Leigh in London, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, good to be with you.
Wonderful to have you. Did you think that Poppy, the heroine of your new film, would be seen as revolutionary?
Well, I see her as revolutionary, so I don't see any reason why anybody else should fail to do so.
Great. Describe the revolution for us, then.
Well, the great thing about Poppy is she is, in a sense, as a person, if you take her as an actual person, she's, of course, a fictitious character. She is somebody who is positive and really looks life in the eye and absolutely won't let things get her down, although she's absolutely rooted and grounded. She's not an airhead. She's not a kind of silly girl. But I think I felt it was quite radical to make a character who does that, because you don't really see them in films that are fundamentally serious and real.
How did this character come onto your screen, Mike? You know, we associate you with you've got certainly warm and devoted and principled and loving characters in lots of films, but lots where it's really, really, really bleak out there. How did Poppy, with her kind of burbling, smiling, just relentless, upbeat quality, begin to emerge in your mind as a lead character?
Well, you know, I just felt the need to make a film that, you know, we really do live in tough times. I mean, you know, we are making a mess of things, and maybe over where you are by within 24 hours or something, you'll have made an even bigger mess of it. Who knows? I hope you don't. You know, there's a lot to be gloomy about, but whilst we may sit around being gloomy, there are a lot of people out there who simply roll up their sleeves and get down to it and are positive. And not least amongst those are school teachers. And Poppy is a school teacher. She teaches kids, elementary school kids. And, you know, I mean, I think you describe her as relentlessly happy. I don't think she's relentlessly happy.
No, she does relent. It's true. It's true.
That makes us suggest that it's
not maniacal or mindless. That's right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a grounded, grown-up, sensible, focused, responsible, mature person. But she has a great sense of humour and a great joie de vivre, and she's got a healthy streak of anarchy in her.
And it is there a lot more than an awful lot of folks these days, though when the moment calls for it, she can turn and look on with real compassion and seriousness as well.
Yes. And, of course, the whole thing is served hugely by Sally Hawkins, who plays Poppy, but for whom we would not have a character like we've got. I mean, I collaborate, as you may know, with my actors to create these characters, as distinct from working with a conventional script. And, you know, collaborating with Sally, with whom I've worked before, yielded up this extraordinary and positive character.
Let's talk about, we'll talk about that collaboration in a moment. Let's hear just a little bit from Happy-Go-Lucky, Mike Leigh's new film, where at the very beginning, early on in the film, the lead character, Poppy, her bicycle is stolen. We've seen her sort of gaily riding through London, and the bike is stolen. She decides to take driving lessons. She's got a very serious, if not disturbed, driving instructor, Scott, played by Eddie Marsan. He's continually frustrated by Poppy and her optimism, even her clothes. Here's a kind of comic scene. The two in the car for driving lessons and their clash.
Okay, check your mirrors.
Yeah, checking, and checking.
Okay, indicator, knock on the door, let them know you want to come in.
Ding dong.
Knock on the door, okay. Put your foot down on the clutch, put it in first gear. Okay, find your biting point just before you go. Okay, stop.
What?
Put the car in neutral. Put the car in neutral, put the handbrake on, take your hand off the steering wheel, your foot off the pedal, and turn off the ignition.
I haven't even started.
I don't care, I've stopped. Now you tell me why I've stopped.
Got a headache?
No, yes, I have got a headache, and you tell me why I've got a headache.
I don't know. Time of the month. Oh, give me a clue.
Well, think. Top to toe. Top to toe. Boots, Poppy. Boots.
Here we go.
Every week, I ask you, please wear appropriate footwear. Yeah. And every week, you insist on wearing those stupid boots.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You know what this is? This is vanity before safety.
All right.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones. I'm sorry. Poppy killed your child, but don't worry. She looked really cool in her sexy, seductive boots.
Am I keeping you awake at night, Scott?
No.
Are you sure about that?
Poppy and Scott in the car for the driving lesson in Mike Leigh's new Happy-Go-Lucky. It's almost like a set piece comic routine there, Mike. How did they come up with it?
Well, that's a funny question. I mean, you know, that's our job, to create entertainment and to make it real and meaningful and funny and all of those things. And we arrive at these things in my films by creating these characters and then putting them together and exploring what happens to them through lengthy improvisations. And then we script it very precisely through rehearsal and we film it. And that's how we did it.
I guess that collaboration is what I'm probing at there. How you get from the first sort of understanding of these characters to the actual script when you don't come in with a script in advance. Is it Scott and Sally or, of course, Eddie and Sally sitting side by side on a couple of chairs, imagining they're in the car and riffing for days?
No, because that's assuming that dialogue is just talking.
Mm-hmm.
But no, what we actually did was go out in a real car and they improvised the lessons in the streets with me lying on the back seat trying not to laugh. Much later, we structured the scene. I mean, you mentioned Vera Drake before. Mm-hmm. It was a famous improvisation that lasted 10 hours when we were preparing Vera Drake, where, you know, the family was having a party and the police came to arrest Vera. And none of the actors playing the people in the family knew that she was an abortionist because the characters didn't. And they'd spent weeks and months in the rehearsals not knowing that. And they didn't know the cops were going to show up. And they didn't know there were any cops. So, you know, but the whole thing was incredibly spontaneous and organic and real. And out of that, I constructed what I think has become a bit of a well-remembered sequence. And the whole of Happy-Go-Lucky is created in that way. It's very real and spontaneous and truthful. But my job is to put these elements together and push them and pull them and so that we arrive at the premise for a film.
So when you first sat with the cast for this film, what did you tell them about it?
Apart from the fact that I'm not going to tell you what I told them because it's a trade secret.
Okay.
I don't gather them all together, and we don't work together. I mean, I work individually with each actor, and we create a character, and then I put whichever characters are appropriate together, and we slowly build up relationships. And I mean, in Happy-Go-Lucky, for example, you have Poppy and her two sisters. You also have her with her roommate Zoe, whom she's played by Alexis Zegerman, whom she's lived with, you gather, for 10 years. Mm. And of course, both of those sets of relationships were created and explored and, if you like, lived through during the months and months of preparatory rehearsal. But this is all a way of bringing into existence a world that really is, that you really believe in when you see it. And I find, really, because I set out on the journey of making a film in order to discover what the film is, that's really the answer to it, really.
Manola Dargis in the New York Times loved the film. She looked back when she reviewed Vera Drake to All or Nothing and talked about it as an exercise in miserableism verging on self-parody, though a great fan of Vera Drake and of Happy-Go-Lucky. Were you looking for a kind of change of tone in your life, work, you know, let's drop the dark and look lighter here? Was that deliberate?
You know, I've made 18 full-length films. Mm. And every time I make a film, I do something different. You know, I don't like to serve up the same dish every time I invite you around for supper. Mm. Sure, this film's different from its predecessors, but then I made a film called Naked that followed Life is Sweet. And right. I also made a film called Topsy Turvy, which was as different from all my other films as you could get because it was about Gilbert and Sullivan in the 1880s. Mm-hmm. And it was full of song and dance, but it had its dark side. This film, Happy-Go-Lucky, which is very much an upbeat film, nevertheless has its dark moments, I think anyone would agree. Mm-hmm. But I do regard Happy-Go-Lucky in some respects, and I've actually called it this, as an anti-miserabilist film. I don't actually agree with the description of All or Nothing as a relentlessly miserableist film, or whatever that was that you quoted, because I think that's to forget a film of great warmth and compassion as well. But certainly Happy-Go-Lucky is an anti-miserabilist film because, as I say, well, there's much to be gloomy about. And I think, you know, let's take the cue from people who are disposed to be positive.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with director, screenwriter, and playwright Mike Lee about his far from Hollywood life in film and his latest upbeat release, Happy-Go-Lucky. Mike Lee joins us from London. We mentioned earlier Vera Drake out just a few years ago, you may have seen, set in 1950 London. On the outside, the main character there, Vera Drake, played by Imelda Staunton, seems like a normal everyday housewife. But unbeknownst to her family, as Mike Lee was just saying, she secretly performs abortions. Eventually, the police come for her. In this scene, they show up at the front door during the middle of an engagement party for Vera Drake's young daughter. Here, Detective Inspector Webster, played by Peter White, takes Vera Drake into a separate room for questioning.
I know why you're here.
I beg your pardon?
I know why you're here.
Why are we here?
Because of what I do.
Because of what you do?
Yes.
What is it that you do, Mrs. Drake?
I help young girls out.
You help young girls out? How do you help them out?
We're having a party today. Can I sit down, please?
Yes, of course.
I don't want to spoil it for my family. Can't you come back tomorrow?
Scene there from Vera Drake. Director Mike Lee joins us from London. Very different tone, though lots of warmth in that film. What was the dynamic you were looking to point up from early 1950s London there, Mike?
Well, I'm old enough to remember what it was like before the 1967 Abortion Act here in England and Wales, which, of course, legalised abortion. I remember what it was like when people had unwanted pregnancies, and it was very nasty indeed, and all kinds of women, as is the case wherever it's abortion is outlawed, supply services which really ought not to happen in society, in a civilized society. And so I was moved to make a film that went back and to remind us what that was like, really,
and the pain that was there, and her as a kind of almost an angel to those who needed her at that time. Vera Drake.
You know, the thing is, in all societies everywhere, there have always been hundreds of women like Vera Drake who do that thing, perform that function, that service, that duty, if you like, or if you, some people would say, commit that sin. I don't see it like that, because it's something that people need, for all the reasons we know.
What is it in your background or the way in which you entered film that's led you to this kind of granular treatment of life in film, as opposed to putting you on that sort of Hollywood whirligig? What led you to come to film this way?
Well, you know, I grew up in the 40s and 50s. I was born during World War II. I grew up in Manchester, the great northern industrial world. My dad was a doctor in a very working class area. We lived over the shop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the local schools. I mean, as you will know, the north of England is a very straight talking world where we look at things as they are. I think I carry some of that with me. I was drawn to show business very early. I went off and trained as an actor and went to art school and film school and did all those things in the early 60s, and was very much part of the avant-garde theatre in the 60s and beyond. And then my first love has always been movies, and I was raised going to the pictures and only seeing Hollywood and British movies. I never saw a film that wasn't in English till I went to London in 1960 when I was 17. Mm. I discovered world cinema. Although Hollywood is part of my culture, I mean, I've always been really motivated to look at the world in a kind of real way and want to put it on the screen. I mean, when I was a kid and sat watching all those movies, I used to think, wouldn't it be great to see a movie where the characters on the screen were like real people?
That was my... Try that on.
You know, and, yeah. And I remember being 12 at my grandfather's funeral on a very snowy, cold day in Manchester in December 1955. And as the guys staggered downstairs with the coffin and the small front hall of the house was crammed with people, I remember thinking, this would make a great film. That's what I want to do. I want to make films about things like this. So I've always been motivated to find ways of telling stories about the real world and in a way that makes it feel real. And although I've got I've worked as an assistant director at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre at Stratford and all that kind of thing, really that's been my driving motivation and passion, really, to do that. And as for Hollywood, I mean, I'm a European filmmaker, I'm a British filmmaker, I'm an independent filmmaker, and I have no more reason to make films in Hollywood than I have to make them on the moon.
Mr. Lee, we have a lot of people who want to speak with you. Let me begin to turn to them. Miriam is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Miriam, you're on the air with Mike Lee in London.
Hi, I hope you can hear me. Mike, you won't
remember me. I can hear you, Miriam.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can still hear you.
Okay. Many years ago, I auditioned for you. I can't even remember what film. But I wanted to share with everyone that it was one of the most fun auditions I've ever had, and that when one auditions, improvisation is one of the forms in which one must expose themselves, and so in which someone is most vulnerable. And you are by far the deepest, kindest, most caring person I ever auditioned for. And I just wanted to thank you, and I think that is reflected in the caring and the love you bring to your films. And well, I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, thank you. That's very nice indeed. And it's I am sorry you didn't get the job, but it's very nice of you to say that. Thank you, Miriam.
Miriam, what was it about Mike Lee's treatment? How unusual was it to be an actor before this director, as opposed to maybe the others?
To make a stark and generalized contrast, in America, you step in and people aren't interested in who you are or what you think or if you think. They only want to know if you can perform. And in England, it's quite a different approach. People want to know if you're actually a thinking human being and if you have an opinion on scripts. And but with Mike, it was a step further than that. There was a deep, deep respect for knowing that if you're there, it's because you respect the craft and that you care. And so the respect he gave you, in turn, brought the best out of you. And that is such a wonderful way to function. Mm. And he also, his actors are like that. I was in Tokyo with Katherine Cartledge when she just learned that she had the part for Naked. And Katherine had done a Kleenex commercial for Mike, and she had got the Kleenex commercial, but she felt that she shouldn't do the Kleenex commercial, so she'd written Mike a letter saying, I'm so sorry, I just can't be in a Kleenex commercial. And Mike Lee had responded to her in saying, Katherine, I completely understand, and thank you. And again, it's this kind of deep respect he has for actors, for people, and I think it is translated into his work, into your work, since you're there, Mike. And I'm just I'm deeply grateful for that.
Mm. Miriam, well, thank you.
As you've now reminded me exactly who you are, because you only gave your first name, and it's nice to talk to you again.
Oh,
and how are you?
Miriam, thanks very much for your call, Mike. It makes me want to ask if there are strands of actors and actresses you can work with and strands you can't. An actress who couldn't do a Kleenex commercial and be in your film? Are you able, do you find actors who work in Hollywood are also sort of cut from the kind of cloth that works for you or not?
It's nothing to do with Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are actors who are for whom my kind of work is. Look, you know, the thing is, I work with character actors, mm-hmm. and that's not what they mean by that in Hollywood, which is old actors playing small parts. It means actors who are versatile, can play all kinds of different characters, who are motivated to, you know, do people like the people out there in the street. Not all actors are interested in that or can do it. I can only work with intelligent actors. Not all actors are intelligent. I can only work with actors with a sense of humour. Not all actors have that particular characteristic. And I also I tend to gravitate naturally towards generous, unselfish actors who, you know, are going to care for each other, you mm-hmm. know. Mm. So, but above all, I it's actors who are really creative and can go on a journey of discovery and aren't concerned. I mean, anyone that's in a film of mine, they don't know what it's going to be. They don't know what the part's going to be. It's a discovery. And some people can't take that risk. But for those that are prepared to, it's a lot of fun.
Let's go. Miriam, thanks for calling. Mike Lee in London, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Philadelphia, Carrie Rickey, film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Carrie, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Tom. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Carrie.
Carrie, you're the professional critic, Carrie. How do you see the work of Mike Lee, and how do you see his latest Happy-Go-Lucky in that big sweep of work he's done?
Well, first, Happy-Go-Lucky. It's all of Mr. Lee's movies are an incredible experience. Let me talk about the experience of watching them. It's like being on the street or the subway or the supermarket line and seeing real people behaving and feeling kind of embarrassed that you watched a drama that maybe that was private. But that's how you feel in the movie theater, that you're watching something private and privileged and that you're watching actual behavior. And that's an experience we more often experience that in an actual theater mm-hmm. than in a movie theater. And so it feels like raw, unprocessed, and amazing emotion. And it opens your heart instead of entertaining you necessarily.
Almost a kind of voyeurism.
It's not voyeur, it's real, because mm-hmm. when you're on the street, you know, and you're watching something, it's not voyeuristic, mm-hmm. you're not just being calm.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, and it's actual behavior. So the quality of the experience is very different than being passively entertained.
And what did you think of Happy-Go-Lucky?
It made me want to be a happier person, because Poppy elicits the best out of people, and because of her attitude, and the movie, it seems to me, I don't know how, whether this was the desired effect. It was about three kinds of teachers. Poppy has, there's a flamenco teacher she has.
Yeah, wonderful.
There's a driving teacher she has, and she herself is a primary teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And the flamenco teacher is maybe too expressive and sometimes has to leave the room. And the driving teacher is very tamped down and not expressive enough. But Poppy is, as Goldilocks would find, just right. She has the right amount of knows when to hold back and knows when to express. Oh. And it's I found her very, very moving, and Sally Hawkins just extraordinary, a tonic.
And that, I mean, there are times when she's pretty burbling over the top, at least to my eye. Maybe I'm too dry. But Carrie, were you able to run with all of that? I mean, she is really, really happy.
I have to say, Poppy is the kind of person, if I encountered her in a bookstore, as the movie opens in a bookstore, I might move away from her.
A little, or maybe not.
But at the beginning of the movie, she's a little bit irritating, but then she's like sunshine. And the book she picks up in the, I believe, in the bookstore is a book about the sun. And that's who she is. And you want to, you're drawn to her. You're drawn to her light.
Mike Lee, I hadn't thought of it. Please. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think the thing about being, that people can be forgiven at the beginning of the film for wondering, can I spend 2 hours with this person? But, you know, I mean, it's all about, you know, it's a character study on one level. It's a portrait. And, mm-hmm. you know, as in life, you meet somebody and all you've got to go on to start with are your preconceptions and what you've experienced before. But gradually, as you get to know them, they become three-dimensional and the layers are stripped away and you really get to know them and understand them. And I think that's what should happen with anybody that watches the movie, with their relationship with Poppy, really.
I love the idea.
All of your movies let us see characters in many different situations. And I was wondering, as I watched Happy Go Lucky, I was thinking that Poppy is a little bit like Vera Drake. She wants to fix people. She wants to repair people.
Yes. Yeah.
And there was an almost, that sense of wanting a healer.
I think that's right.
Did you have this sense of Carrie looks at your three teachers here, and I really hadn't thought of looking at it that way, but the wonderful flamenco teacher played by Karina Fernandez, and then, of course, our very stern, maybe disturbed driving instructor.
Scott, mm-hmm. the driving instructor, he pontificates about teaching and education. I mean, he's useless. I mean, he's an absolutely dreadful teacher. He doesn't understand the first thing about it. And of course, Poppy is Poppy is someone one would like to have been taught by, or whom one would like to teach one's kids.
Yes.
And indeed, her roommate Zoe is obviously a good teacher, and indeed the other teachers in her school. But then you have this, as you say, this flamenco teacher, who is actually a rather good teacher, as the other teachers say, except that she doesn't know one of the first rules of teaching, which is you leave your personal emotional baggage outside the classroom.
Yes, please.
She rather lets it all hang out.
It stamps it out, you might say. So, Carrie, did you go out of the theater, you know, and slap on a smile and decide to keep it on there in the face of all life brings?
Carrie, I must interrupt. Carrie, I must interrupt. I think Tom's being a bit cynical, don't you think so, Carrie?
No. I mean it.
I mean, natural. Eddie sort of makes natural cynical assumptions.
I'm not trying to. It's an honest question.
After the movie, I was a screening, and I went to the ladies' room, and some of my colleagues were in there laughing and crying and trying to decide whether they wanted to be more like Poppy or more like Oscar the Grouch.
Themselves.
You know,
it's
a movie that makes you it makes you think about how your attitude colors everything around you, and it was a movie that made us more self-conscious in a good way, I think.
And kind of hands you a choice. It's very true, Carrie Rickey. It's always great to get your insights. Thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you so much, both of you.
Carrie Rickey.
Thank you, Carrie.
Yeah, a film critic there for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mike Lee, I do think it hands people that choice, and I don't mean it cynically, but you put it right out there very effectively. Mike Lee joins us from London, director, screenwriter, playwright. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with director, screenwriter, and playwright Mike Lee about his far-from-Hollywood life in film and his latest upbeat release, happy-go-lucky. He joins us from London. Here's just a little bit from the film, where Poppy, played by Sally Hawkins, her younger sister and her roommate, Zoe, Alexis Zegerman, go to the country to visit Poppy's pregnant sister, Helen, played by Caroline Martin. Helen's concerned about Poppy's life, and here the two go back and forth about what it means to be responsible and happy.
Well, you want a baby, though, don't you, Poppy?
No, thanks. I've just had a kebab.
I don't mean that. Eventually.
Maybe. Who knows?
At 35, you're considered a high-risk mum.
Oh, give me a chance. I've just turned 30.
25 years away. You've got to make plans.
What, five-year plan? Like Starling?
When are you going to get on the property ladder?
Oh, I need to step up first.
You've got to get yourself a mortgage.
We don't want the hassle.
You really need to invest your savings.
I'll just stuff mine under the mattress, Helen.
Have you got yourself a pension yet?
You've got to be joking. Have you got a pension?
Of course, we've both got pensions, haven't we, Jamie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great. Where'd you keep some of frames?
You've got to take life seriously, Poppy.
Have I?
You can't go on getting drunk every night, partying, however much fun it is.
I don't get drunk every night, do we?
No, she's an adult now. Your big sister.
Unfortunately.
You have to take responsibility, Poppy.
OK, take it easy, darling.
I'm taking it easy. Just want you to be happy, that's all.
I am happy.
I don't think you are.
I am. I love my life. Yeah, it can be tough at times. That's part of it, isn't it? I've got a great job, brilliant kids, lovely flat. I've got her to look at. I've got amazing friends. I love my freedom. I'm a very lucky lady, I know that.
All right, there's no need to rub it in.
No need to rub it in. She's a very lucky lady. Mike Lee joins us from London. Let's take some calls, Mike. From Brookline, Massachusetts, Susan is on the line. Hi, Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Mike, for everything. Thank you for, gosh, the amazing and pliable reach of your work, how you don't manipulate, how you trust the viewer is what especially gets to me. I love how it seems to me you've stretched the narrative arc to unexpected places. You don't employ the usual rising action and climax and denouement. The pathway is full of surprises, and sometimes you let it be uneventful, so we have to find our own meaning, which gives us a greater involvement in the whole dialogue. I thought happy-go-lucky, I loved how it turned the mirror on us, how it wasn't only about Poppy and her story. It was also as much about our reactions to Poppy, our responses to her, and how we could sort of be with her and think about her in relation to us. For example, if you'll indulge me, after the movie, I got into the car and adjusted the rearview mirror and started thinking, en-ra-ha, en-ra-ha. And I thought, oh, my God, Poppy's contagious. It's like a Buddhist pass it along. We're just going to take your vision and put it out in the world. I'm just very, very grateful. Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
En-ra-ha, the mantra her tough driving teacher has given her for remembering where to look and what to do when she drives. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Susan. Let's get another from Albany, New York. Christine, you're on the air with Mike Lee.
Yes, hi. I saw Happy-Go-Lucky a few weeks ago in Montreal, and I loved it, as the audience did there as well. They applauded at the end of it. But one scene that I left puzzled about was Poppy and the homeless man under the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't know where you were going with that. It seemed like it was sort of just plunked down there, and you know, I haven't really heard anybody even refer to it today. And could you enlighten me a little bit on where you were going with that scene with Poppy?
This is the middle of the night, or more or less, and Poppy wanders under a bridge where she hears a homeless man apparently sort of talking to himself, and they have an encounter. What's it about, Mike?
Thank you for the question, Christine. It's a key scene in the film. It's nothing. It's hardly plonked down, as you say. I mean, you know. It's happens at a point in the film. I don't want to talk about the film in too much detail because some people haven't seen it, of course. But it's at a point in the film where Poppy is being reflective, and she hears this thing. She's inquiring. She wants to know what it is, who it is. The scene is about her openness. It's about her ability not to be judgmental, about her ability to immediately to connect with somebody without barriers and without, you know, testing, and she does, and she hears him. She relates to him. She does actually connect, and it's an emotional scene. It's a scene that, I mean, it's It is dark, and in both literally and in its mood. And I deliberately, it's interesting that you say it's under a bridge. Everybody's got a different notion as to where it is, and we deliberately filmed it in a way where you actually don't really know where you are. And I wanted it to have a sort of subliminal effect of it feeling, you know, not as comfortable as perhaps as some of the rest of the film. And it's something very private. It's a moment that happens for Poppy. And it is about her ability to be open and to connect. And I think it's the most important scene in the film. Actually, it's interesting you say nobody's mentioned it here. Of course, we haven't been on the air very long. Mm. I've just been in the States for 4 weeks, and I've done lots of discussions with audiences, and everybody mentions it and asks about it. And in fact, you are the person who is could be guaranteed to ask it today. So it's actually a scene that does engage people, and I think it's well, anyway, as far as I'm concerned, it's terribly important.
Stanley Townsend there playing the tramp in the indeterminate space under the bridge or somewhere feels like.
Yes,
that.
And of course the scene again is blessed by Stanley Townsend whom you mention. He is it's a brilliant and extraordinary performance, albeit for one scene.
Homeless apparently, and Poppy opening to him there. Christine, thanks for your call. Matthew in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Mike Lee.
Hi there, Tom, Mike. Tom and Mike. Yeah. My question is this. I'm someone who has studied playwriting and screenwriting, and I'm hopefully going to be in graduate film school next year. And I've always really been drawn to films that don't shy away from happiness and hope. But it also seems that sometimes that can be not so popular or, you know, quote-unquote artistic. And I'm wondering, it seems like it's a challenge to sometimes put those on screen because it's not as dramatic or it's not as much conflict, but I'm wondering how you deal with that, Mike, and this film. I haven't seen Happy Go Lucky yet, but I look forward to it, and I'd love to hear how you handled that issue.
Mike Lee?
You know, the thing is, sorry, I didn't catch your name again.
It's Matthew.
Oh, my name is Matthew.
Matthew, sorry, Matthew, I didn't jot it down. Matthew, the thing is this, you know, so far as I'm concerned, people are people. And there are all kinds of people and relationships and predicaments and experiences. And I don't really regard making a film about somebody who is positive and disposed to look for the happiness in life any differently from a film which deals with somebody who is depressed. I mean, it's about looking at people in a real, truthful, organic and thorough way and finding a way of making it interesting for the audience. Now, if your question would then be, well, what is that way of making it interesting for the audience? I mean, I really work on the principle that everybody is interesting. Mm. And, you know, the skills that one brings to it, which you develop over just by the years and of doing it, are all about, you know, building your instinct to know what is, you know, how to miss out the dead bits, really. But in the end, everything and everybody is interesting, and I don't really have an answer to how do you do positive or happy ones any more than any others, because it's all about looking at life in a truthful way, whatever it is, whoever it's about.
And even, I guess, if you start with Poppy's view of the world or her posture toward it, there's plenty of room for conflict there. You mean she'll run into plenty of darkness on the other side, and I guess even she would carry her own. Let's get a call from White Plains, New York, and Jim, you're on the air with Mike Lee.
Yes, hi, Mike. Jim, you did answer the question. One of my questions, it was about the scene with the man under the bridge, because we were puzzled by that. And then just before that, it looks like she's walking through a hedgerow or a maze or something. Was that just before that scene?
Yes. What's the question? Where is it?
Yeah. Well, what is you it? Know, I, really, that wasn't my question. I mean, that's not what I was calling, but I'm glad you asked.
What is your question?
We were puzzled, not puzzled, I found that she was hiding between a facade, behind a facade. There was something about her that I didn't like. It was, she actually kind of made my skin crawl. It was like an insecurity, a self-centeredness that she was putting up this facade, and she bothered me. Has anyone else had that reaction? I'm listening to the other callers. Everyone seems to love her.
You weren't swept away with the feel-good side or the... What do you say, Mike Lee?
Well, I don't get it, really. I mean, I can understand what you're saying, Jim. I think it tells us more about you than it does about Poppy or the film. To me, She is. There's no facade. She's not hiding anything. She is one of the people who is you know, what you see is what you get, and it's for real. She's not. That isn't her complexity. And I simply, I suppose, if I'm honest, I'm depressed by your kind of reaction to the character in the film. It upsets me.
Could you hang out with someone as irrepressible as Poppy? Maybe you do, Mike, in your
who?
Life. Can you imagine living day in and day out with someone quite that wah-ha-ho over the top?
Yes, but she's not. Mm-hmm. You know, you continue, even though we've agreed that you're not cynical, you nevertheless continue, although half an hour ago you agreed that wasn't how she is,
well,
and yet you're continuing to perpetrate this myth. Let me finish what I'm saying.
Please.
You know, you're perpetrating that myth, but she's not like that. She's actually focused and grounded, and there are many moments in the film when she's absolutely able to be really still and care and pay attention and all those things. She's not.
Quite true.
But on the other hand, she has this great joie de vivre and this mm-hmm. ebullience, and I would be delighted to spend an enormous amount of time with such a person.
All right. Let's go to Alex in Nashville, Tennessee. Alex, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey there, guys. How are you? I've seen Happy Go Lucky. I think it's a great picture. I just have a real quick comment and then a quick question. And the comment is, I've just moved back to the States after 10 years in London, and thank you, Mr. Lee. It's so great to see what I would say is the real London, as it were, on the big screen, and not just seeing somebody like, you know, all Notting Hill and mm-hmm. You know, the various Hughes folks, you know, Snow in London, all that kind of stuff. So that's what it was great to see. So thank you so much for doing your
thank
fine
you.
Work. And my question is this, and that's how the film is being received in the U.S. versus the U.K. and how it's being marketed. Because at least how it's being marketed and reviewed here in the U.S., it seems, well, this is Mike Lee's feel-good picture, and it's, you know, a wonderful piece of uplifting work. And while it is uplifting, a sense of life being uplifting, you know, there's huge swathes of darkness in this, and that, but someone has already brought up the, you know, the mentally ill man. There's also, I don't want to give too much away, but there's the boy that's abused. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the character of Scott, who's got severe problems. So the film seems to be much more complex than it's being portrayed in the media in this country. Is it the same thing in the UK? Is it being received differently over there?
Mike Lee?
No, well, yeah. Your question is not so much about how it's being received, but how it's being marketed. It was marketed similarly in the UK. It is one of those unfortunate facts of life that people who market stuff, especially out there with the climate the way things are, with my kind of film, simply have to bend over backwards to find ways of persuading people who might not otherwise set foot inside the movie house to see such a film to do so. So, unfortunately, they are kind of obliged, and I don't like it much, but you kind of have to accept it to sort of push particular aspects of the film to make it, and thus in a sort of reductionist way, and that's what you're talking mm-hmm. about. Because, mm-hmm. as you say, it is a film of greater complexity and greater depth, and with its lightness and darkness and joy and pain, because life is like that, and that's what the film's about.
Alex, thanks very much for your call from Nashville. Mike, I wanted to ask you about something you were quoted saying here in the Los Angeles Times a couple of weeks ago. You said, quoted there, saying, "My tragedy as a filmmaker now is that there's a very limited ceiling on the amount of money anyone will give me to make a film because they don't know what it's going to be about and because I won't use stars and because there isn't a script. And I really passionately want to have the resources to paint on a much bigger canvas. It's a shame and I won't be around forever. I'm 65, so..." What about that sentiment? Are you hungry for a bigger canvas? If resources weren't an issue, with your style and lots of resources, what would you like to do?
Oh, all kinds of things. You know, apart from anything else, you know, I'm now known as the London filmmaker because I make all my films in London because we can't afford to go anywhere else, basically. Mm. No, I'd like to do... There's all sorts of things. One of the things I definitely would like to do is to make a film about Turner, the great painter.
Haystacks, that Turner?
No, that's Constable.
Oh, okay.
No, Turner, J.M.W. Turner, the great painter of, you know, the father, the so-called father of Impressionism, mm-hmm. though he didn't know that's what he was going to be. he was a great cinematic subject and a great character. But that's just one thing I'd like to do. But, you know, you pay a price and, you know, that's the way it is.
Oh, let's get one more call. Amy, Lincoln, Massachusetts. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And hello, Mike. I've been watching
your
work ever since you first showed up in this country. And at that time, when you first showed up in this country, I was doing a lot of improvisational theater. And so at the same time as I was watching you work with your actors the way you do, I was doing it myself. And I have to say, you have some of the most honest and real moments I've ever seen in theater, especially that movie about the two pregnancies in the Irish hospital.
Yes. That was 4 days in July.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a wonderful ending. I was just, even though I couldn't understand half of what the talent was saying, that ending was just so powerful for me. And I love your work. And thank you.
Amy.
Thank you very much. Our time is short, but another bouquet from an actor there who likes the way you work. Mike, are you watching our politics over here in the U.S.? What are you thinking?
You betcha. I certainly am.
And
I've been in the States recently, for a month, and my test, I say to people, you know, no, people say, no, Obama will win, definitely. And then you say, I've been saying, you realize you'll have a woman president by the 1st of February. And they don't say, oh, no, out of the question. They say, oh, don't say that. Don't say it. I can't bear it. You know, so there is this terrible, terrible worry that it could all go wrong. I hope it doesn't. I really don't. I just hope that Barack wins. That's all I can say.
And give us the why in the 20 seconds we've got left.
I don't need to. Anybody that's listening knows why.
There's the word from London. Figure it out for yourself as if you're one of maybe his actors in one of his films. Mike Lee's latest is Happy Go Lucky. Mr. Lee, it's been fascinating speaking with you. Thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Mike Lee, film director, screenwriter, and playwright. His film in theaters now is Happy Go Lucky. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Rally, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby, with help from Kerry Schutpeltz and Michelle Tran. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.